one of our own on WNR.
The sound of Waterford. WLOR. WLOR.
In this second program from the second series of One of Our Own, Joan Clancy is interviewed by Catherine Foley about her life with celebrated singer and actor Tom Clancy and about her art gallery in on Rhine. Roseanne Foley recorded and edited the series, which is produced by On Corsacock.
This was made with funding from Commissioner Na Man and the television license fee.
Joan Clancy, widow of the late singer and actor Tom Clancy, runs an art gallery in On Rhine. She painted a vivid picture of her life as a child growing up in Dungarvan town.
I'm one of the few people now who was born in Dungarvan town. I was born in Emmett Street in Dungarvan, across the road from where I eventually lived. And that was Nurse Fitzgerald's nursing home. And so I was born there one sunny morning, I believe.
And were you the eldest?
I was the eldest, yes, my father and mother. My mother was from Kilgobnish. She was Babs Devine from Kilgobnish. And my father was Paddy Welsh from the top of Friary Street. And at the time, we weren't living in the house that we eventually lived in, which was at One Mountain Villas. It was one of four brick houses called Mountain Villas. And my home there was the one that's nearest to the Ardskull and nearest to the swimming pool, where I spent a lot of time as a young girl in those summers from long ago, which were always sunny and warm, and the tar was always melting on the road coming up from the swimming pool, and I loved it. I used to walk in my bare feet, and of course when I'd get in home to Mammy, you know, she'd have to clean the tar off with butter.
So it was a sort of an idyllic childhood, was it?
It was so idyllic at the time, because children at that age had the freedom to roam, and the town became their playground. And we were up to no mischief at all. We were just, and everybody looked out for you, because the population of the town was smaller at the time too. So everybody knew everybody. And even if they didn't know them personally, they knew who they were, you know.
Joan told me how she had two schools to choose from when she was starting out in primary education.
It was the Presentation Convent and the Mercy Convent. And they were both for girls. And Presentation was up the street, up the right hand side, and further up. And the Mercy Convent was just a stone's throw, and was on the next block. So I went there when I was four, and my cousin Rena Kiley brought me there the very first day, and I always remember it. And you know, when I see her now, I say, Rena, you brought me to school the first day.
And was she much older than you?
She was only 2 years older than me, you know. Yeah. But if somebody is four and their cousin is six, and it was only up the street and around the corner. Yeah. So it was great. I loved the nuns. And this sounds Dickensian now, but when we went to school, we learned to write and we learned to draw and we learned to do our figures on slates, with chalk on slates. And when I tell that to children, I was teaching then for many years in the same convent myself later on, teaching elocution. But I went to school here, and you know, when I started off, we learned to write on slates. And you know,
and they're flabbergasted.
They're flabbergasted, absolutely flabbergasted. So yeah, I enjoyed the convent. At the primary school, there was the staff were all nuns, and they lived in the convent there, and they knew everybody, and they were able to look out for people. And I used to read. I used to love getting the comics on a Monday evening. The bus came up Mary Street from Waterford, and it dropped when it went around the top of Mary Street, it threw the comics and all the papers, the evening papers and everything, onto the footpath outside Coston Curran Bailey's. And then when I saw the bus, I'd go up then to get my comic. I got school friend, and I loved that. But I used to, the children's library was just up the street from me. And when I grew out of that, and when I'd read everything there that I wanted to read, then I used my mother's car to go across the road to the adult library.
Joan recalls the day she made her first Holy Communion and how it was a different occasion to the celebrations of today.
In those days, when you made your communion, you went back to the convent to the boarding school and they gave you breakfast. So you, I think you went down to the school first before the communion and the mass, and then you all paraded up the street. So that was up the street past my house into the parish church. And I don't remember the ceremony itself, but I remember going back down and Mammy waving at me from the front door and Daddy, and going back down to the convent, and we got boiled eggs and toast and tea. And it was great because everybody was tapping their boiled eggs, and you know, and some people who wouldn't eat boiled eggs at home ate them there because everybody else was having them. So I remember that. And I remember my Aunt Mary, she used to take a lot of photographs with her little brownie camera, or Kodak camera, and standing at the entrance to the new secondary school, as it was at the time. And there was the gateway was half moon shaped, and I was standing in the centre there with the gate behind me, with my little white dress and my hands folded together and my thumbs crossed.
And you still have that,
do you? I still have that photograph, I do.
Joan's father was Paddy Walsh, a proud Dungarvan man.
My father had three sisters, and one was Cora, who was nursing in Ardkeen, and Mary, working in Dungarvan, and Nora. He was the secretary of the Dungarvan Brass and Reed Band, as it was called at the time. It's now called the Brass Band, Dungarvan Brass Band. But he was the secretary.
And did he play an instrument?
He didn't, but he transcribed the notes onto these manuscripts, you know, into the five lines and four spaces. He copied them out so everybody had their notes, and they put them on top of their saxophones or whatever, you know. Yeah. But he had the patience to do that, and he had wonderful handwriting as well. And he worked for the Urban Council, which is now the Town Council, and he was rent and rates collector there. And sometimes people would come to the house paying rent. And, you know, if Mammy and Daddy weren't there, you could take the money from them and write it into the book. And, you know, he gave the receipt. But, like, people, because everyone, you couldn't do that now, but you could do it then. So that was dealing with the public.
Yeah.
Joan loved school, and it's clear from her memories that she thrived in secondary school.
When we went into secondary school, then we had all the separate subjects, and we had people, you know, who you had much more time for English and much more time. And Sister Rosario was wonderful, and we had her in fifth and sixth year. But I had different English teachers all along, up through the secondary school. So that, and
so was that your favourite subject, do you think, English?
Yeah, English and geography and art. But art really wasn't, we used to do it on a Friday afternoon in school. I used to love doing that, and love, you know, doing the Celtic designs and doing all of wallpaper, repeat patterns for wallpaper or repeat patterns for fabric. And I loved them.
After completing her Leaving Cert exams, Joan did a secretarial course, and then she headed off for Dublin.
When I went to Dublin, then I went to night school, and I went to Greg College. And I went to NCAD at night for two semesters.
And what did you study there, Joan? Was it art, pottery or sculpture?
No, it was art, and I loved it, but I knew I wasn't the best in my class. So I knew I couldn't make a living at that, because you have to be so outstanding at that. I went to speech and drama, and I went to Deirdre Ryan Galassi and Nora Lever. And so I did my diploma there from the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art. And so
and were
I was
you
teaching.
Working part-time as well, Joan?
I was working, well, I went to Dublin first. I was working in Kevin Street College of Technology, and it was the old college in Kevin Street.
So what but were you doing? Was
I was
secretary?
A secretary. After my leaving, I went to the Tech in Dungarve to do a secretarial course. We used to call that the finishing school at the time.
I suppose, was it true at that stage, opportunities were not huge for women? You weren't given that many options. Is that true?
That's true, yeah. Well, you know, Mammy would have liked me to have been a nurse, but I didn't want to be a nurse. And I became a teacher then. And I worked with Deirdre Ryan Galassi, and I taught in a lot of schools in Dublin.
In the city centre?
Yeah, I did, yeah. There was one off Church Street, North King Street, and the school was empty except for upstairs, because all of the people that it used to accommodate had now moved to Tella. the new houses in Tella, yes. Or they moved to Finglas, and there's a lot of new houses. But that school was lovely, and you know, the children who were still there, a lot of them were living with their grannies, but the staff were so caring, and you know, it was just lovely to go in there.
Joan returned home at weekends. She bought a new car, and this gave her the freedom to choose where she'd go to teach.
I used to teach also in Loretto Convent in Kilkenny on a Friday. And that was so lovely. They were so nice there.
So you had all these, you were freelancing, and you were an elocution teacher for
yes.
hire.
And I taught in the Navan Road primary school in behind the new church, as it was at the time, in the Navan Road as well. I was very young when I got my first car. I got a loan from Bowmaker Bond in Waterford near Reginald's Tower. And I think my car, I bought it new in Mount Marion Motors, and it was a white NSU Prinz, and I ordered red seats and grey carpet.
What year was that?
That was 1967 or 8.
You were so independent.
I was, yeah, I was. And I was on the examining board for the Leinster School of Music as well, yeah. For elocution. So that was great money earner.
So you were quite a trailblazer in many ways, yeah. in that area.
Joan was at home on her holidays when she met her future husband, the famous singer and actor Tom Clancy.
I was friends with the Moonies, and I came out to Moonies, and they were going out on a trawler on the Vega from Helvick with the Clancy brothers and the Moonies and Dennis Mooney and the whole lot. And I went over to Helvick with them, but I couldn't go on the trawler because I had to drive my uncle Mackie Devine back to Kilgobnet that evening. But I came out that night. Carmen said, come out tonight now. So I did go out tonight, and I was down in the old house, and it was known as Tessie's shop. That's where I was with Carmel in the kitchen. And then Dennis and Tom Clancy came in, and a few other people came in. And we were sitting around the kitchen table, a round table, I remember, and Tom was reciting poetry. And he said, Dylan Thomas's Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night. And I said, do you know Farron Hill? And he was delighted to meet somebody who knew Farron Hill. And that's how we immediately connected.
Yes.
You know, we had a lot in common.
Because he was an actor as well as being a famous singer.
And a world traveller. And I hadn't been any place except to Dublin, you know.
Yeah.
But in my mind I'd been traveled.
So it was that connected you. It wasn't that you were attracted to his fame or that the name of the Clancy brothers.
No.
It was his love of words.
That's right, yeah. And he did have a love of words and poetry and literature. And he had a quotation from everything. And many of the quotations would be from Shakespeare and from Shaw and Singh as well. And Dickens is the best of time. It was the worst of time. Sometimes he'd, you know, he might be sarcastic about something and he'd say, it was the best of time. But he really loved words.
Joan and Tom fell in love, and they were soon planning their wedding.
So when did you get married? How many years later?
It was
Joan?
a year and a half later, we got married. So my wedding anniversary, now my 55th wedding anniversary, is on the 9th of December.
Yeah.
So we got married in New York City. And of course you had to be married in City Hall first, the civil part of it. And then we got married in St. Bernard's Church in 14th Street in Greenwich Village. And one of the chief celebrants was Father Peter Jacobs, who was also a friend of Pope John the 23rd, and he was friends with the Kennedys, but he was also a priest in Greenwich Village and used to come into the Lion's Head. So he loved the literati and the glitterati. And
was Tom, had he a big personality? Describe what he was like on a one-to-one for you.
Yeah, he did, but he was a great listener. And he understood, you know, I didn't have to explain myself to him. So that was huge.
Yeah. Yeah. He was from Carrick and Shore originally.
That's right.
And then he went away to be an actor.
Well, he joined the Royal Air Force when he was very young. Actually, he put up his age in order to get in. But so he was there, and then he went to America and subsequently became an actor and was acting in Greenwich Village.
As Joan explains, it was when the Clancy brothers first arrived in New York City that they went to live in Greenwich Village. And it was here that they started singing together.
They used to do concerts then to raise money for rent for friends of theirs who were, you know, actors as well and singers. And out of those concerts, then the Clancy brothers kind of... Now, this is a very rough distillation of it, but that's very brief, but that's how the Clancy brothers and Tommy Makin formed.
Yes. And through every so often through, they'd come together.
Yeah, and well, Deanne Hamilton, who was one of the Guggenheimers, she was involved in Tradition Records with Paddy Clancy, and they were always collecting folk music down in the Appalachians and different parts of America, and she decided she'd go to Ireland to collect. So during one trip to Ireland, then she was sent to Mammy Clancy's in Carrick and Shore, and she was sent to Sarah Makin's in Cady County, Armagh, and that's where she met Tommy Makin. And Tommy Makin then met Liam, because Liam was on that trip with her and he was carrying the equipment. And then Tommy Makin subsequently went to America, to Dover, New Hampshire, but he injured his hand, and so he couldn't work. So he came down to New York and met up with Liam Clancy and the Clancy brothers and those concerts that I'm talking about in the Cherry Lane Theatre.
So when you got married to Tom, Joan, and you were out in Greenwich Village, did you stay at home then, or did you start to work yourself?
No, I went to America to marry Tom, you know, and so I went in October and we got married in December, and then we... So at that time, the Clancy brothers and Tommy Makin were in full flow. You know, they were doing concerts in Carnegie Hall and twice a year. Yeah. And the Royal Albert Hall in London, you know, and all over America and England. And so you took it all in your stride. I took it all in my stride because I was so young. Yeah. And we didn't have any children.
Was Tom a little bit older than you?
He was, yeah.
Oh, okay. He was. So he had lived
but he was young at heart.
He must have been. Well, he sounds like... Well, I knew him a little bit from meeting him on the pier. Mm. But he was a larger-than-life character, wasn't he?
Well, all the Clancys were.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
They had this great personality and this great love of life and words and music.
Yeah. Joan was quite a young woman when she went to New York first. I imagine it must have been a bit daunting.
I'd lived in Dublin for nearly 4 years as well, you know.
Yeah.
And... See, Kim and Liam were in New York at that time too, you know, so I wasn't like plunged in with nobody that I knew.
Yes.
So that was a great help. Yeah. Mary and Paddy had moved back to Ireland, so Tom took over their place in Brooklyn Heights. It was a lovely place to live. It was one stop from Wall Street, which was great, and you went under the East River and then you went up on the 7th Avenue subway up to Greenwich Village, up to Christopher Street and Jordan Square, and that's where you got off. But Blaunine was born in Lenox Hill, that's in Manhattan, 77th and Lexington Avenue, between Park and Lexington Avenue, 77th Street. And then a year and a half later, railing came along, so we were still in New York. Then when Blaunine and railing were about 2 and 3, the Clancy brothers and their different formations had come to the end, really, and they all needed to take a break. Mm. So Tom went back to acting, and he went back to his Broadway agent. So he went into Pygmalion. And then from that, he did work for Channel 13, which is the public television in America. And he did a Eugene O'Neill play for them, and that he had done before, with Helen Hayes before, A Touch of the Poet. And then he went into A Moon for the Misbegotten on Broadway. And this was great for us because it was one of Broadway's top dramatic hits. And it was Jason Robards and Colleen Dewhurst, and Tom played the father in it. The play was scheduled then to move to Los Angeles. So we moved with it. And we went out on TWA, It was really life with the stars then during the run of that show, because we used to go to Malibu most Sundays as guests of Burgess Meredith in his house in Malibu Colony.
A great actor, yeah.
And Burgess was, he was Tom's mentor, if you like. He was a father figure to Tom. And beside him lived Larry Hagman and Maya. And of course, you know, Dallas. So Hagman,
JR.
But Maya Hagman designed Burgess Meredith's jacuzzi, as she did their
the
own.
The way you do.
As you do. And that was the first jacuzzi I ever sat in, was Burgess Meredith with JR and Maya and Tom and Blonin and Raylene and Burgess. And on Sundays then JR would parade up and down the beach in Malibu waving with a flag and a kind of white robe. That he wasn't speaking to people.
So when did you start writing? You had a column, Joan, for the Sunday World, and you started doing bits of journalism when you were out there.
I did. You see, I used to write stuff for Tom. And, you know, if somebody wanted to do an interview.
Oh, a press release or
and
something.
I didn't know it was called a press release at the time. But I did. I remember doing something for the TV Guide in New York. And the girls, the journalist there said, oh, that's wonderful. He said, can I use that word for word? You know, the, and of course I said, you can't. That's why I wrote it. But I didn't know that it was a press release. I was just telling her what she needed to, what we thought she needed to know. And but then Joe Kennedy was managing director, founding director of the Sunday World. And he asked me, would I send him some pieces from Hollywood? And I did. And Tom would help me with them because, you know, and I used to get the double page spread. And in those days, you put them in the post. And I used to get the colour separations from the studios. Now, the studios, before I started, the studios had to know that I was okay, that I wasn't some muckraker or somebody with bad, you know, bad standards, low standards. And low morals.
And Joan, and did you have a byline in the Sunday World?
Yeah, I did. Wow. So I used to do that. And the studios were very accommodating to me. But they loved me because I was Irish. And I had a certain carte blanche too with some of the studios where Tom worked.
And Tom was in Charlie's Angels and what else? The Incredible
Hulk. On the Prairie, Starsky and Hutch. Now, I had access to the closed set of Charlie's Angels because I did a piece on them for the Sunday World, and that was through Tom because they knew Tom and they knew that I was okay as well. But it was, you know, that was because the world's eyes were on Charlie's Angels at the time, and having access to a closed set in Hollywood was quite an achievement.
In July 1985, Joan, Tom and their two girls moved back to Ring. They brought their cat too, and they all settled down in the Gaeltacht. But sadly, time was not on their side.
And at that time, Tom was on the world tour of the Clancy Brothers' 25th anniversary reunion.
Yeah. And Tom, 5 years later,
yeah.
You lost Tom.
Yeah.
He died from cancer. That was so sad.
Yeah.
So it broke your heart, I'm sure, Joan.
It did, but look, I'm nearly crying now thinking of it.
Take a minute.
Rosemary then was born in 1988. And so she was 2 3/4 when Tom died, but he was cracked about her. So when Tom died, see, I had to take care of Rosemary then, like this little baby, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and Blondine and Raylene were in college. So I just keep going, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
You couldn't just slacken off, you had to.
Yeah. And when did the idea of the gallery take shape?
Well, Blondin,
I mean, your
and
gallery
Raylene,
now is so established, we kind of take it for granted. But you created that from nothing.
That's right. Mm. Blondin and Raylene then graduated from art college, and they were painting and they were doing things and they were teaching art and, you know, and all those artist schemes. But they wonderful paintings. I had them on the floor of the drawing room to see if people would like to buy them. And I thought, look, we'll extend. And of course, I think it's a good thing to extend in bricks and mortar, you know. So we took the roof off the drawing room and went up and built the tower then to access
this beautiful gallery that you have up a turret stairway.
Yes.
It's lovely, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And that's, so that was in 2000.
Is it about six openings you have a year? I mean, how many years has it been opened now, John?
Yeah, we had our first exhibition then in 2001, actually. And we were having four or five exhibitions then, but now we have three or four.
Yeah.
Times have changed as well. There are a lot of galleries around now, and a lot of artists are selling online, and it's a whole different ball game.
And do you love it as a business, the art world?
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. I'll be mentoring an artist now from the Ukraine very soon.
And you also have a link with the Crawford, don't you, every year? What is that?
We do. We offer an exhibition prize to a graduate of the fine art, in the fine art degree programme. Yeah. And our next one now will be Saoirse Radford, and that will be next summer.
You must be a shrewd businesswoman, Joan, at the same time. You know, you do have a grasp of accountancy and all of the business end of it.
I do. I say I write everything down when it happens as well, you know, like, or if I get a bill, if it comes into me, I pay it immediately, you know.
Yeah.
And I write down everything in the book.
You're organised.
Yeah, if somebody gives me a deposit for a painting, that goes in. I have a specially designed accountancy system. And that goes into that, and that's there.
Yeah.
And then when somebody collects the painting, that's into the book as well. That painting was collected by so-and-so on, and, you know, the balance paid, and everything is all written down.
As we came to the end of the interview, Joan told me about her faith and whether she's a spiritual person or not.
Oh, I don't know. I grew up and going to say my prayers and going to the evening devotions, and when John F. Kennedy died, when I heard his death announced, I was actually at evening devotions in the Friary in Dungarvan, and the priest said it from the pulpit. So that will tell you, and I was doing my commercial course then, so I was no longer in school, and I was, you know, a year after school. But now I'm a spiritual person, and I do say my prayers in my own fashion. Well, I don't know if there's anything there when we go. I think if there was, I'd know it, and I don't feel that there is.
Yeah. Well, Joan, gura míle míle maagat asan agalav aaling.
Tough Walter Road, Catherine.
This was made with funding from Comisiún na Mban and the television license fee.